Welcome back to the Movement Toward Change podcast. Today, we're super excited to welcome Beth Mochizuki. She's a dance educator and artistic director based in Boston, Massachusetts. She received her Bachelor of Arts degree in American Studies from Tufts University. And Beth has danced for a variety of companies, including Festival Ballet Providence, State Street Ballet, Ithaca Ballet, and Jose Mateo Ballet Theater. She's currently the Ballet Division Coordinator at Tony Williams Dance Center and the Artistic Director of Asian American Ballet Project. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for reaching out.
All right, welcome, Beth. So our first question, could you tell us a little bit about your career path and journey so far?
Sure. So I always credit my ballet teacher when I was growing up. Her name's Diane Mosier, and she's actually Korean-American, which I'm sure we'll get into later, but she like really inspired me to believe in myself as a dancer and as an Asian-American dancer. So I started there when I grew up in Clovis, California, and then I ended up coming to Tufts University, like we're talking about, and I was apprenticing at the time with Festival Ballet Providence, which I thought would be a great idea because they're sort of close to each other, but it turned out not to be so great because the commute was long and I couldn't be in the studio as much as I wanted to be. So I ended up just doing that for 1 year. And then I, when I was at Tufts, actually, that's when I was dancing for Jose Mateo. I just did one of their Nutcrackers. That also proved to be too much for college. So the rest of my college years, I was just working, not working, but dancing at the school. We had a company called Sarah Band. So we choreograph our own dances and perform them for our friends. And that seemed to work for me for the rest of that time. But then after college, I wanted to get back into dancing in a company. And I happened to meet Tony Williams, who at the time it was Ballet Rocks, but now it's City Ballet of Boston. And he does the Urban Nutcracker. And we actually have been working together ever since. We had a really good connection. And so I started working for him a little bit and dancing in his production. And I was also doing other local companies. I worked with Boston Dance Company, Spindle City Ballet, and other choreographers in the area, like Anna Meyer, Kathy Hassinger, Davidson, those kind of folks. I did that for freelance for a few years. And then my husband, he was my fiance at the time. No, actually, I don't think he was my fiance. My boyfriend at the time, we ended up moving to Ithaca, New York, so that he could go to grad school at Cornell. And that's where I started dancing for Ithaca Ballet, which is like kind of a small company. So I was dancing for them, which is great because it's mostly with the school kids. So I got to do a lot of principal roles, and that was a great experience. And I taught a lot when I was down there. And then we came back to Boston, and when I was in Ithaca, I'd met another girl who's sort of in the same boat as me. She was actually working on her doctorate, but she had grown up dancing. She still wanted to keep it in her life. And she was like, you should talk to my sister. She's a professional dancer with State Street Ballet. So then I ended up auditioning for State Street the following year and I got in. So then I left Boston, went all the way to State Street, which is in Santa Barbara, California. And it was just too far from I was still with my boyfriend, and then I ended up coming back here, and you know, we ended up getting married and we have a family. But so that was important to me to come back to Boston. But then I wasn't sure I was going to do professionally because I liked dancing for State Street was one of the first. It was the first time I was dancing full time, because even when I was at festival, I was just apprenticing, so it was part time. But I wanted to stay with that, so I ended up auditioning for a festival again. I was like, "Hi, I'm back." And like, great. So that was where I ended up staying for the rest of my career, which is another 6 years. And I retired in 2019. And I was still actually, so when I came back, I started working for Tony again. And I was getting more involved in his Urban Nutcracker. I was the ballet master, and then I became the assistant director of the Urban Nutcracker. And then when just a couple years ago, I guess no, it was last year, I left Tony's to start my own company. So that's what I'm really doing mostly now. I don't know if that's a long way of describing my career, my journey. The whole time I've been teaching, actually, like I started right after high school teaching in local studios for that summer. And then even when I was at Tufts, I was doing the city dance program. We like go around to the schools and get third graders to join the Boston Ballet program. And then I taught in local schools around here. I taught in schools in New York and in California again, and then back here. And I became Tony's division for his school. He has Tony Williams Dancer. I'm the ballet division coordinator there. And I've been doing that since 2019, I think. Yeah, when I retired from dancing. Yeah.
Wow, that's awesome. That's such a cool career path. I love kind of seeing like what people end up falling into and the different experiences you have. So
no, it's so many, it's like they're phases, at least for me. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just like be in a company and get to the top, and you know, it's like freelance and try different locations and come back. And I think maybe there are a lot of people that are like that too. So
definitely. And I'm sure you kind of learn a lot at each different phase.
Yeah, definitely. I know, like, I used to, when I didn't have a full-time company job, I would think like, oh, what's that like? I wish I was doing that and I didn't have to do all these part-time things. But even with a full-time job, a lot of the time, at least for me, I felt I had to keep teaching to make extra money. So it was never really like, I'll just be a dancer. It's like, I think we all wear a lot of hats as dancers.
For sure.
Yeah.
So what inspired you to start your own dance company featuring Asian American dancers?
Yeah, so it's sort of like the company I'm starting is the company I wish there had been. So I don't know if people in the podcast land know this specifically, but I'm Asian American, Japanese American, I'm biracial. And I just wished that there would be a place where I would feel a sense of community and that I felt like I really belonged. I guess when I was my whole career there, not all the time, but there'd be times when I'd question, do I belong? Am I being treated fairly in certain repertoire? Like, is this really what I want to project as a person? I think the traditional company experience, like a lot of people like me, we have these questions and we don't have a lot of fellow dancers we could bounce these ideas off of. Like, how do you feel about being in the back line? It's all right. We're kind of tall, or, you know, maybe it's not a thing, but we're like always questioning that. I think like, why did I get cast in Chinese? I don't know, because you're good at that. Oh, okay. Or, you know, or it's just difficult to have these feelings coming up and to not have other people to kind of talk it over with. So I figured if there was a place where we could have that community and we could all be sort of together, those issues would drop away and it would just be, you know, oh, I didn't get the part because I'm not a Turner. Or, you know, instead of like, I get the part because they don't want to put someone like me in that kind of a role, or just those little questions that we have. And also, I also felt, I think it sort of had to do with going to Tufts. I actually wrote I had a thesis that I wrote on the Asian American experience in ballet. So I've been thinking about this for a long time. But I think it kind of opened my eyes taking classes about different things and studying. I studied American studies and thinking about like how racism plays into our culture and how certain stories get told and certain stories don't get told. And it made me think about like, why aren't we doing ballets that have Asian settings or Asian characters, or even talking about the American experience? We're always thinking about this European experience from centuries ago. You know, why aren't we doing anything that's more relevant to people like us today? So I thought that would be important if other people were interested to explore those ideas and make those kind of performances possible. Yeah.
That's so wonderful that what started as your thesis has kind of culminated into this company, and those ideas have been brewing and shaping for so many years. And related to the company, how did you go about selecting dancers and collaborators and choreographers? Is there some, you know, did you have an idea of people ahead of time, or was it more as you've gone, you've met people? Yeah, if you could speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, so I have a couple colleagues I danced with. I think this is a little bit tricky because there aren't a lot of us in the ballet world. So it's kind of hard to find my network and pull from them. But I did have a dancer I danced with, and he said he would join. And then he was like, you should talk to this other girl who just joined festival after you left. So I got her to hop on board. I spoke about Tony Williams before in the Urban Nutcracker. So I had a friend who danced there who wanted to join, and also another friend who's going to choreograph. So I was able to pull from like festival, from Urban Nutcracker. And then I also actually, one of my former students who I taught in the summer dance program at festival, I reached out to her. She's now like finished with college or in her final year of college. I think she graduated. I was like, would you like to come dance here? And she said she wants to. So yeah, I've been sort of like reaching through my network and able to find people. For choreographers is a little, I did find Junichi through Tony, but I found a man who choreographed for my student company when I was growing up. And I reached out to him. I was like, hey, I know you used to choreograph for Diane's company. Would you come? Would you consider coming out here? And so he's actually coming out here. But it's tricky to find Asian American choreographers locally. There's one other woman that is going to be setting work on the company, and she teaches at Tufts. So I got like an email from Tufts, like, alumni, come to the dance events. And I was like, Hung Ji Yu. I was like, oh, so I emailed her, hey, would you like to be a part of my company? She said, yeah, I'd love to set something on you. So yeah, I mean, I think anyone who's starting a company, you have to find people you know or people who are related to you in some sort of professional manner, because it's hard for just the average dancer or choreographer to take a chance, you know, on something that's unknown. Like, sure, I have this vision, but what if it doesn't happen? What if I'm wasting their time? You know, so there has to be some sort of trust, I think, when you're getting established. So that's been sort of the process for me, just kind of reaching out. And there have been a lot of like times when I couldn't find people, and it's like, you know, you just have to keep plugging away. Because there are people that do want to be a part of something. There are people that are more risk averse. So, but yeah, it's a process.
Definitely. That totally makes sense. And what has been one of your biggest challenges in kind of starting your own company, and how have you worked to overcome that?
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because it's like really related, those two things. Like the hardest thing for me has really been finding people to, just dancers, choreographers. And then even people have reached out to me, say, oh, I want to get involved. But a big part of my mission is to use Asian American artists as much as possible. So I'm like, well, you have great qualifications, but like I have to kind of turn people away. And I'm saying, you know, it's not that I don't want to work with you. It's that my mission, I'm like trying to really keep this sense of community. And so it's been a little bit tricky to find potential artists. And even like I'm connected with people. Like when I was in California, I met people, and when I was in New York, and people I know who now moved to different states. And it's like, I'm bringing Michael from out of state, but I can't bring a lot of people from out of state. I'm just starting up. So it's like, I have this a little bit of a network, but they're so far away that it's hard to locally put something together. So it's been tricky to find people locally who would work with me. And I wonder, like when I'm teaching here, I see a lot of Asian American students come through these pipelines of these different schools, and it just makes me wonder, like, what happened to them? Why aren't they dancing now? And you know, I can't really guess what happened. I mean, a lot of dancers, I think, as a child, you're dancing, 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 and then you decide to go to college, you decide to become some other kind of professional. But it's like, it's just funny to me that there are so many of us, it seems like, in the schools versus how many you see in companies. And I wonder if people aren't finding the opportunities to stick around in Boston and have a dance career. So yeah, I think that's a little bit of a problem for me, like how to address that challenge has been difficult for me.
Yeah, those seem, you know, if you don't have the people and the choreographers, then those are the ones that make up the company. So that definitely makes sense as a challenge. And I think especially Boston dance community is a somewhat small dance community. So I can see how that makes it hard to find students. But what sort of aspirations do you have for the company, for the future, and also for the dance community as a whole?
Yeah. So for the company, I'm really like hoping it becomes this like hub of Asian American talent where dancers will want to be and choreographers will want to set works and you know musicians will want to collaborate, artists and costume designers. That's really my goal for the company. And I want to expand. Like I'm doing our first show is going to be in July, but that's like sort of it for our first season. I'd like to expand that going forward. Do more programs, maybe target different sorts of audiences with like more cutting edge contemporary versus like family friendly, more classical, like different sorts of versions of who we can be in the ballet world. And I want to expand also the company roster, get more people, a bigger budget, maybe do like a big production one day, sets and costumes and all that good stuff going on. That's like less of a black box kind of production and more of a, you know, exciting proscenium sort of thing. But for the dance community, I think I see a lot of cool stuff happening in larger companies. I see like New York City Ballet just brought an Asian American choreographer, Houston Ballet. There's like some different Ballet Austin that's, you know, it seems like companies are open to starting to do things that are different from what when I was dancing. It wasn't, you know, you weren't bringing any real like contemporary choreographers unless they were white, you know, it's because those are the people who are getting the work at the time. But now that's changing a little bit. And I hope that's not a trend. I hope it's something that's going to stick. And I think for audiences, one thing they can do to support that is going to the shows, maybe donating and earmarking the donation for dancers of color, for choreographers of color, because I think that's really important to show these companies that this is a good thing to do and this is what the audiences want. And I think American audiences do want to see that. They don't want to just keep seeing the same classics or the same Balanchine or modern stuff over and over again. They want to see things that I think resonate with them. And whether that's seeing dancers that look like them or choreographers that are making stories that they can relate to, I think that's really important. And we as the audiences need to support that. Yeah, I guess.
Both sound like really wonderful goals. Oh, Nicole, you were going to say something. Sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say that sounds great. And I'm sure as you start to kind of collect more people, you'll be able to have all these bigger productions. And
yeah, I hope so. I mean, yeah, I'm just going to write it out and see where it takes me. But yeah, awesome. I'd like to, if people want that kind of thing, that's the kind of thing like, I think my company is an interesting place if like, cause we're designing things just for Asian American dancers versus other companies that are diverse and don't necessarily have the, you know, cast or roster to pull from to do an all Asian American ballet. So I think it's great to see choreographers set works on all different kinds of dancers, but it's also cool to see them set works that like really speak to the experience of the dancers themselves. So that's what I'm trying to create.
Definitely. And is there one piece of advice that you'd like to give to your younger self? And what would it be and why?
Yeah. My advice, I think I spoke a little bit about dancing different kind of roles that feel like off-putting. And I think my advice would be to myself to speak up when something feels wrong as a dancer. And I think even other dancers, like as women in dance, sometimes we're doing something and we're like, this part feels very over-sexualized, or like, I'm supposed to kiss this guy. I don't want to kiss anyone. That's not my partner, you know? And I think the way it relates for me is like, I was asked multiple times in my career to perform the Chinese variation in Nutcracker. And it never sat right with me, like the costume and the movements and just being like asked as an Asian American to portray this specific character just like never sat well with me. And the first time I was asked to, I didn't say anything. I just danced it. The second time someone asked me to do it, I said, like, I don't want to. Is there something else I can dance? And I was surprised because the director said, yeah, you don't have to dance that. You can dance Mars Pat or whatever the other option was. And it like kind of opened my eyes to like, oh, we as dancers have the power to speak up. And I think we don't often think that we can and that anyone will hear us if we do speak up. So I would tell myself, speak up. The third time I was asked to do it, I didn't speak up. And I like kicked myself because that we took that production on tour and I had to do it like almost 20 times. It was awful. Every night putting on this hat and the whole, you know, Manchurian collar and pointy fingers. And yeah, it was not what I wanted to portray. And I kept thinking about what about these kids that are coming to these shows and seeing a woman who's Asian American, like making herself into this caricature of something that's, you know, Chinese, but it's not Chinese. And it's like me, I don't know. It was like a lot for me to deal with. Over and over. So the last time I was asked to do Chinese, I said, I'm not going to do it. That director said, you have to do it anyway. But after that, I didn't have to, you know, I think he heard me. He was just like, well, it's too late. You're doing it. But so I think it's okay to speak up and not worry that you're going to get taken out of the ballet completely. You know, I think I would tell myself, like, just say something when something's wrong, because otherwise, you're going to regret that. And what are the repercussions of perpetuating, you know, the stereotype? And, you know, it's not just you who feels bad. You're making other people feel bad, you know? Like I've been to shows where I went to a show once with my dad, a Broadway show, and he wanted to walk out halfway through because there was a character that was like very stereotyped. I was like, Dad, what's the big deal? But afterwards I was like, you know what? He was standing up for himself and that made him feel bad. And like, that character maybe didn't think about how the audience is feeling. You know, it's like part of the story and I was asked to do it, but we also have to think as artists, like, what is our art, you know, doing to people? We want it to make them feel great. And like, I don't know. I was going to say when I was doing the last time I had to do Chinese, when I wasn't dancing Chinese, I was doing Sugar Plum for some shows. And it was a great experience because my partner was, he's of Asian descent. The girl who was doing Clara was also of Asian descent. And it was like, so great. And like, what a great message to send to the young kids out there who look like us. Like you can grow up to be Clara in a few years and like down the line, Sugar Plum. And this is a path that's open to you. And I think that's the alternative. Like we could stay stuck in these roles that don't make us feel good, or we can like choose to say something. And there's this opportunity to really do something meaningful, which is kind of what my company is about, trying to show Asian Americans in these roles that have been not always open to us and to hopefully inspire the next generation.
I think that is really wonderful. And the fact that you're using your own experience in the ballet world to then create a different experience for the next generation is just really, I really admire that. It's like you learn so much from being in an experience that you like as much as an experience that you don't enjoy.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So, well, thank you for taking the time to speak with us on this podcast. And we're looking forward to sharing with our listeners. And if anyone has further questions, you can find more information about Beth and support the company on AsianAmericanBalletProject.org.